The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
So very happy to have on the line with me now Kishore Mahbubani, who is a current distinguished fellow at the Asia Research Institute, the former founding dean of the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy. The author has China Won. Kishore, welcome to the show today.
My pleasure.
Great to have you with us. And you were in the Foreign Service for 33 years. You were based in Singapore, the Foreign Ministry, at the time of this most important relationship-building moment between China and Singapore. But tell us a little bit about what you remember that moment in time and how important that was for Beijing and Singapore to really come together and formalize those ties.
Well, I think, you know, that was a very special moment in China's history. And I think the key point that we must always bear in mind is that to understand China-Singapore relations, you must understand the geopolitical context in which it was happening. And 1990 was a very difficult year for China. This was 1 year after Tiananmen, 1 year after many Western countries either cut off or reduced their ties to China. And at a time when I think the Chinese government was actually looking for signals that countries still wanted to work with them. And so Singapore's decision to establish diplomatic relations in 1990 was therefore very much welcomed in Beijing. And they recognized, you know, the way there's an old expression, friend in need is a friend indeed.
Indeed. Yeah. But was that a difficult decision or a risky decision for Lee Kuan Yew to make at that time in the foreign ministry here to go ahead and, you know, and develop those ties, like you say, at that moment in time when, frankly, most countries around the world were not happy with what China was up to?
Well, it was difficult in some ways. And, you know, as you know, one of the key considerations for Singapore is that we had to preserve our special relations with Taiwan. And, for example, our military training in Taiwan was very important that it could continue. So we managed to work out a win-win agreement between Singapore and China where they understood our sensitivities. And I think it's also important to emphasize that in 1990 also, despite the fact that the U.S. had been very critical of Tiananmen, the then president of the United States was George H.W. Bush,
right,
who actually still continued to retain a close and affectionate relationship with the Chinese leaders. He was a friend of Deng Xiaoping. And so at that time, there were no fundamental tensions within China and the U.S. at that point. And the U.S., of course, was in a great celebratory mood after the Berlin Wall came down in 1989. This was the end of history moment, and the United States felt supremely confident about its place in the world. So when Singapore established relations with China, there were absolutely no problems at all with the United States. And actually a year or two later, Singapore played a very helpful role, and this is very critical, is that the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, APEC, forum was set up, I think, a year later. And again, Singapore was the first chairman. I was personally the chairman of the senior officials meetings when the APEC senior officials met. And quite amazingly, we managed to get China, Taiwan, and Hong Kong to join as economies, I think in 1992 or 1993.
Wow.
I'm not exactly what year. So that was a time when the U.S. and China were still working closely together despite their differences. And, of course, that's a very important context in which to understand where we are today, because clearly, as I document in my book, Has China Won, a major geopolitical contest has broken out between the United States and China, And this is going to create challenges for many countries in Asia Pacific, including Singapore, going forward.
Let's talk about that in just a moment as we speak with Professor Kishore Mahbubani, Distinguished Fellow at the Asia Research Institute. Also, many will know you from your work as the founding dean of the LKY School of Public Policy. But in your 33 years, from 1971 to 2004, in Singapore's Foreign Service, of course, you were twice the ambassador, Singapore's ambassador to the United Nations, served as president of the UN Security Council. I mean, the accolades just go on and on. I don't have literally have enough time in the show today to go through everything that you've done.
Yeah,
but suffice it to say, you have really been at the fulcrum, at the point when history was made. Now, as you look over these 30 years of relations, the formal relations between Singapore and China, what has the value or what has the benefit been to Singapore? What has Singapore gained from that relationship, that formal relationship that started 30 years ago?
Well, I think there's absolutely no question that the turnaround in relations between China and not just Singapore, China and ASEAN, is one of the key reasons why ASEAN has emerged as one of the most peaceful and prosperous corners of planet Earth. I think there has been extraordinary accomplishment, because when ASEAN was set up in 1967, China actually denounced the creation of ASEAN and said that ASEAN was set up by a group of neo-imperialist countries. You know, but amazingly, from the 1990s onward, Singapore was the last country in ASEAN to normalize relations with China. Mm. After that, relations between China and ASEAN and China and Singapore grew dramatically. And of course, a dramatic breakthrough was made when China became the first major economy to propose a free trade agreement with the ASEAN countries in 98 or 99, around there. And it was negotiated in record time completed in 2001. Mm. So a lot of ASEAN's growth, and to some extent also Singapore's growth, because Singapore's growth depends on ASEAN also, is due to our closeness to China and to the fact that China became the fastest growing economy in the world. So if you want to use the analogy of a locomotive, China was a locomotive pulling the ASEAN countries along. They grew. And as you know, it's also important to emphasize, in 1997, 1998, the ASEAN countries suffered a lot from the Asian financial crisis. Mm. And the country that helped the ASEAN countries the most was China, because China resisted the pressure to devalue the renminbi at that point in time.
Mm.
So there have been obviously areas in which we have worked closely with China. But I must emphasize there have also been challenges.
Sure.
So in the 2000s, for example, when the issue of South China Sea issue emerged as a factor in the relations between the four ASEAN claimant states and China, of course, that affected also China-ASEAN relations.
Yeah. We're talking with Kishore Mahbubani, the former diplomat, Singaporean diplomat for over 33 years, on this 30th anniversary of normalization of relations between Singapore and Beijing. Of course, Kishore's latest book, Has China Won, examines China's role in this region and in the world. And one of the other controversial issues that has come up, of course, is ownership of the South China Seas, right? No less than seven nations are claiming certain parts of it, including China and many of our neighbors here near Singapore. Singapore has had to kind of balance that, those discussions and conversations as well, while it is not in direct conflict with China on this particular thing. But it has led to quite a lot of tension with countries in the region. How has Singapore dealt with that, Kishore?
Well, I think Singapore always emphasizes that we are not a claimant state in the South China Sea. So we have no direct stakes in the issue. But of course, we have a direct stake, the South China Sea issue being resolved peacefully rather than through. So for that reason, we are very concerned about what goes on in the South China Sea. And I think what we try to do is play a helpful role behind the scenes. In private conversations. You know, I was personally present. When I was the permanent secretary of the foreign ministry from 1994 to 1998, I led the Singapore delegation of senior officials that went to China, I think to a town called Huangzhou, if I'm not mistaken, where we had discussions with China. It was called the ASEAN-China Senior Officials Meeting. And at that time, the Chinese were very sensitive about discussing the South China Sea. So we agreed that we would not put the South China Sea on the agenda of the meeting. But, of course, you know, there's always a diplomatic way out. So after dinner, we decided to convene for an informal session. And so at the informal session...
It's all in the language. Dinner, it's all in the terminology,
this,
isn't it?
But this is exactly what diplomacy is all about. Yeah, diplomacy is all about strategic ambiguity. And so in theory, we didn't discuss the South China Sea because it was never on the agenda. In practice, we did. And I remember exactly what I told the Chinese delegation in 97-98, I said, coming from Singapore, we obviously have no stakes in the South China Sea issue. But at the same time, it would be unwise for China to underestimate the importance of the South China Sea issue in terms of influencing relations between China and the ASEAN countries, you know. Yeah. So, and clearly it is in China's interest to show certain degree of sensitivity on this issue and understand the concerns of the ASEAN countries. And of course, one development that particularly worries me is that initially, when we were discussing it in 1997, China only had issues with the four claimant states, Philippines, Malaysia, Brunei, Vietnam. But since then, because of the nine dash line, there have now been issues emerging within Indonesia and China.
Yeah.
So I hope that China handles that very, very wisely, because international law is clearly on the side of Indonesia on this issue, because Indonesia has a right under the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, which both China and Indonesia have ratified, to claim 200 kilometers of exclusive economic zone beyond the Natuna Islands.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for both China and Indonesia to agree that international law should be the key consideration here.
Yeah, of course, this is a particular topic that we could spend the entire show talking about for hours, and we can't. But thanks for your insight on that particular issue. Let's move on, because the issue of how Singapore deals with both China and Washington is one of ongoing sort of tug, you know, push and pull. You know, with Mike Pompeo coming to the region this coming week, he'll be in India and he'll be here in Southeast Asia, but not in Singapore. That, of course, reminds us that the U.S. is constantly trying to engage in the Indo-Pacific region. How has Singapore handled the let's say, tension, small t, between dealing with Washington and dealing with Beijing, especially given the U.S. naval presence here in Singapore?
Well, I think you're being too diplomatic. It's not tensions with a small T. It's tensions with a big T.
Okay, okay. We'll capitalize it then. Go ahead.
And actually, that's exactly why I wrote my book, Has China Won, this year in 2020, because clearly Singapore is going to be directly affected by these big T tensions between U.S. and China. And I hope my fellow Singaporeans will see my book, Has China Won, as a gift to them to help them understand this major geopolitical contest that has broken out. And I want to emphasize, many people in Singapore are not aware of this, that if you look at the size and scale of the two superpowers involved, this is actually, in terms of the size of the contest, even much bigger than the contest that the United States and Soviet Union had, because the Soviet Union never, ever had any possibility of developing an economy bigger than the United States. Whereas in the case of, and United States has been by far the most successful country since human history began. Okay, let's be clear about that. So now, amazingly, China may within 10 to 15 years have an economy that's bigger than the United States. So the scale and size of the powers involved in this contest is off the charts, you know. And these are like, you know, it's not like mini elephants fighting. These are the two largest elephants getting involved in a contest. And, you know, there's an old Sri Lankan proverb, which I always cite, which is that when elephants fight, the grass suffers. But it's important. But it's important to add the second point, which is when elephants make love, the grass also suffers. So you have to be very, very careful when you get when you're around elephants. And now we are around two elephants that have begun dancing in a fairly loud fashion. And we are now in the next decade, and this is, and to understand why, of course, you have to read my book. But the next decade will be a very dangerous decade in U.S.-China relations. And I want to emphasize, this will be true even if Biden wins. Because they, many people think that, oh, if Trump is not reelected, things will go back to normal. They will not. And even though Joe Biden will be far more courteous and less insulting to the Chinese leaders, there is a very deep consensus within the what is often called the American deep state, that this is America's last chance to preserve its primacy in the next 10 years. And so it's a very natural insult, impulse by the world's number one superpower, United States, to try and preserve its number one position and stay ahead of the number one emerging power, which is China. And so we'll be entering very dangerous geopolitical waters. And so countries like Singapore and, frankly, all of ASEAN need to show an extraordinary degree of geopolitical sensitivity to manage these very rough waters that are coming in the next 10 years.
So much to discuss. We'll, of course, have you on again in the future as things change or morph or whatever. But great to have you on this 30th anniversary of the establishment of relations between Singapore and Beijing. Professor Kishore Mahbubani, Distinguished Fellow at the Asia Research Institute at NUS, the author of Has China Won? Thanks so much for being with us again, Kishore. We really appreciate your comments.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.